With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
I'll admit I was a little concerned with the podcast with Lenny Clark for a couple of reasons. Number one, he had a couple of battles as of late, and I heard from some guys, Jerry and Glenn, that he wasn't crazy about me personally, which usually I don't mind. That's fine. No problem. I'm going to fight. But Lenny, I don't think it's a fighter. So I wasn't sure we were going to do that. Also, when Lenny comes on the radio with us, with John and Jerry and me, and in the past with Glenn, these other guys, you know, great guy. Great comedian, but sometimes he's on, he's loud, he's going crazy, and you can't have a conversation. And this is ultimately what this was going to be. So that was another concern. I was dead wrong. Ben Kinch had pitched it to me a couple of times, called Lenny a million times to get him on. Ben was dead right. I was dead wrong. This was a really fun and really good conversation with Lenny. We go into everything. And stuff I like. I mean, I'm a huge fan of stand-up comedy from the 70s and 80s, and Lenny was there for the whole thing. We talk about Pryor, we talk about Carlin, we talk about Eddie Murphy, we talk about Robin Williams, we talk about his own stuff with stand-up comedy. It's a really fun and a really good conversation. Lenny was a great guest, one of the best ones I've had so far, not even close. I really enjoyed this a lot. Lenny Clark on Enough About Me.
All right, so let's get this out of the way. So we're both friends with Ordway.
Yes.
Right, which is something neither of us are proud of.
Not at all.
We're both friends with Callahan.
Right.
And both of these guys are telling, and we know each other a little bit. We've done some shows together, but you know, I've always liked you. You ran into my mom and my
and your kids.
Daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
My son, I think my grandmother at the time, a couple of years ago. You were great to them.
Yeah.
They went to see you in Lexington. I live right across the street from there in Cary Hall.
Best show I've done in 30 years.
Yeah.
And I love it.
They're telling me, they're like, yeah, Lenny doesn't like you.
No, I wouldn't be here if I didn't like it. All right.
Don't apologize.
I'm willing to. It takes a big man to admit he's wrong. And right now I'm a giant. I was wrong, but.
You're wrong about what?
About screaming at you.
Oh, I don't care about that. That's part of radio. I'm fine with that.
That was it then.
Because I know you love craft. Like
I really do.
No, you have a reason. So you called in and we yell at each other. But when we do that, I think that's great. I don't mind that.
People enjoyed it. People said it was good radio. But I was just, you know, I was on my way to work. I was shooting that movie, and I couldn't get over the fact that here's a guy, right? You know, people like that talk.
Talk about craft, you mean?
They talk crap about Bob Kraft. I go, where do you get off? You know, I mean, not just you, anybody.
No, it's okay.
The guy saved the team.
Sure.
And aside from all the things that he's done with the Patriots, which I think has been great. He's donated $100 million in charity.
But my point was, can't you do all? No doubt, and I think he's a great owner. I think he should go to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
can't you do all that? But then, can I say, as a talk show host, I don't think he handled Deflategate properly.
I hate.
You know what I mean?
I hate Roselle. I'm not Roselle.
Roselle a break.
I wish Roselle would come back from the grave.
Right.
I love Roselle. I hate Goodell. Jeez. Yeah. I mean. To have a guy who is like the face, you could have Tom Brady as the face of the league, and everyone would be proud of this guy. I mean, for letting air out of a ball, if he he didn't do it. I mean, he didn't physically do it himself.
Right. But my point is, both can be true. Kraft can be a great owner who fucked up a little bit. Like, I don't think that's the end of the world. He's a great owner. I mean, that's, you know, I don't think anybody's going to say that he's not.
And he's a great guy. Jeez, he really
I'm sure he is, yeah.
Such a great guy.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's why. So that was it. But no, I don't
You were pissed. You were legit pissed, though.
I really was.
Which is okay. I thought it was great.
It wasn't an act.
No, it doesn't.
Well, the thing is, you know, we've been friends for over 20 years. You know, it's whole family. You know, I've been friends with the whole family. And for no other reason other than we just hit it off one night, you know, and we went out to dinner. We've done a lot of things, you know, and it's just, I really, really like the guy. And I have no problem with you.
You can. It's okay if you do. I mean, our lives. But Glenn said to me, he's like, yeah, Lenny doesn't like you. I was like, what the fuck? I was like, that's too bad because I like him.
Well, thank you. I think
all the charity you do is great. We always get along fine.
Yes, so I was like, Jesus. Yeah, no.
I've got enough people who hate me.
No. Well, you know what? I wanted to ask you that. See, I don't hate you. I like you. I'm here.
I love you too.
I'm here in your studio.
You are.
On
this palatial studio.
On a beautiful
No shit. You're the schlup here to do this dumb thing.
Watching these young people. Anyway,
we can do it after.
Well, yeah, maybe. So, but it seems to me, like, if someone doesn't like me, it affects me. It really, I mean, and I know you can't please everybody, but I mean, if someone doesn't like me,
Isn't that part of a comedian's desire to be liked or no?
Well,
no?
Some comics don't care.
Don't
some
give a fuck, yeah.
Some comics go the other way and they're very successful. But me, aside from the comedy, I've always wanted to be, you know, a good guy. I wanted everyone to like me. And when someone doesn't like me, I go, "Jeez, what's up with that?" You know, and most people that don't like me don't know me. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Then you get to know me and they hate
me.
But it doesn't seem to affect you at all. If someone hates you or someone does, it seems like you love it. You know?
Well, no, I love it. I just don't like. You know, Jerry and I were talking about it on Friday. It was actually about you on the air. And he's saying that he was like, I tell Lenny that he's a good guy, that Kirk's a good guy.
Hey, Jerry does say that.
Right. Yeah, but my point was, I was like, well, why are you wasting your fucking, like, don't worry about it. Like, I'll see Lenny again and we'll talk and we'll work it out or we won't work it out. At some point, you got to say, not everybody's going to like me. Right. Life is way too fucking short to try and make everybody like you, you know?
We can swear on this.
We can swear.
My best
what the fuck is going on here? You swear over there.
Yeah.
And over here, you don't swear.
You fucking cocksuckers. But no, yeah, I didn't know.
It's all right.
Good. All right.
It's all right. Yeah. So where?
So we're good. We're all right.
For now. We'll see how it goes in the next, half hour or so. How many stand-up dates are you doing, like, a year now?
Good God. It's unbelievable. I've, for the last 3 months, I've been really fortunate that I've been doing movies. I did back-to-back movies.
Right.
Stronger with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yep.
And I played, the guy.
You played Uncle Bobby.
Yeah. It was great. And then I just did this detective movie. I'm the lead. It's an independent film, but I mean, I'm 62 years old.
Shot around here?
Yeah. I mean, how many 62-year-old guys are leading?
not a lot.
No, not it's not the wrong kids. So.
Right.
I did a movie for this director, John DePugh. He's out of North Andover, a couple years ago, and he said, I want to write a movie for you to let people see what a good actor you are, serious actor you are. And I said, yeah. And he wrote the script. I couldn't believe it. I play this detective with 2 months left on the job. For the last 5 years, I've been hunting the serial killer, and I'm obsessed with it. And they give me this hot young partner. She's beautiful, and she's really good at closing cases. She's getting close to finding a killer, and I don't want her to find a killer because the serial killer is my daughter. And that's how the movie opens. That's just the
beginning. She's been covering it up.
Yeah, I've been covering up.
Yeah, for my daughter. Yeah.
Won't you cover for your daughter?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's straight drama.
Straight drama.
No laughs.
No laughs.
I wanted to ask you this. I want to talk about Stronger too, but is it hard for you? Because when I see you here, I see you, like, it feels like you're always on. Like, is a party that's just like,
you know what?
Do you feel compelled to do that, or is that the way you are?
You know what? No, you know, I like just to be able to talk to people. But sometimes, like when I go to the charity events, you know, I do a lot of charity events. And
people,
I do it out of the goodness of my heart. I don't get paid for any of that stuff.
And you do a shitload of it.
And I do. I do more fucking charity than I do regular work.
Right.
But the point is, when my mom and dad would love that made them the happiest.
Sure. Because,
you know, when you're giving, especially the children's hospitals. You know, I love kids. I'm no Catholic priest, but I do love children. And I when we do the stuff for the hospitals and stuff, it's I get a good feeling. I try to raise them. But, yeah, you know, people. It's sometimes, hey, tell me something funny, man. Hey, funny, you know.
You trying to tell them to go fuck themselves? Don't you want to?
Yes. Oh God, yeah.
Right.
I mean, sometimes I just.
I mean,
like,
you have a toy.
I'm a joke monkey. Hey, jump up, dance around for sure.
Right.
Tom Werner was and Larry Lucchino said to me one night, "We want to take you out, and we don't want you to work. We just want you to sit down and just have a good time with us."
Yeah.
And that would be great. And that's happened a few times. Like at Kraft's 75th birthday party, we walk in and John Bon Jovi goes, "How you doing, Lenny?" I said, "Hey, John, how you doing? You working?" He goes, "Lenny, I'm always working." I said, "It used to be like that."
What is John Bon Jovi? I looked him up. His net worth is $300 million, right?
He's incredible.
What is he doing these TV commercials for, singing these songs?
I used to party with Sam Kennison.
Yeah.
Out in L.A. In the mansion.
So this is like in the mid-80s or no?
Yeah. And we were very naughty.
I would think.
And we had everybody come in. All the rock stars you could imagine. They love Sam and the porn stars.
Sure.
John Bon Jovi was one of two people that never did blow or grass or drank. He played a guitar.
Right.
And he jammed.
And he was a kid then.
But he was totally, totally straight.
Who was the other one?
Ted Nugent.
Really?
Ted
Nugent. Is that true? Really?
I swear to God, they wouldn't drink. They would party. They would hang out. They'd have a ball, but no booze, no drugs. I admire that. Plus, it was more for me.
What years were you in L.A.?
Oh, God.
Do you remember them?
I hit it big, you know, the million-dollar contracts and everything in the 90s.
Like okay. 90s, but go back, like with Kinison. Why are you out there then?
Because I was trying to break in at the Comedy
it's Store. Right. You're at Mitzi Shore's.
Yes. Yeah. I was doing really well here.
Uh-huh.
And I would sell out three shows at Stitches on Friday night.
Yeah.
And Saturday night, I'd be someplace else, another three shows. And I was living in L.A. I married the Playboy model, and we moved out to L.A.
Right.
And she's, you know, but there was no money. I couldn't get work.
In L.A.?
And no one would help me. A lot of the guys I helped get started, they just
like who?
Turned their back on me. I forget.
You can't give me one name. So you go to Mitzi Shore's place and you just couldn't get on?
I couldn't get on. And then one night, and I'd go every night. Everyone knew me, but no one wanted to speak for me. No one.
Right.
So one night I went on and I burnt it down. And she said, I went on after Richard Pryor,
Jesus Christ,
Robin Williams, and Eddie Murphy. Ladies and gentlemen, Lenny Clark.
The same night.
And I went on last, and I burnt it down. Eddie Murphy invited me to his office at Paramount Studios the next morning. Mitzi Shore said, "You are now a paid regular." I said, "What's that mean?" She goes, "Well, you get paid." I said, "Really? How much?" $10 a show. So I'm getting $10 a show. That wouldn't pay for my pocket.
Was this after the whole, wasn't there a union thing?
Well, the guy committed suicide, jumped off the building. That came before me.
Right.
So then they paid you. But
right.
No money,
nothing, right.
So I would leave L.A. every Friday morning on a 7 o'clock flight.
Come back here.
Go back to Boston.
Do shows.
Do three shows Friday, three shows Saturday, and be back in L.A. by 11 o'clock Sunday morning.
And there you.
And I did that every weekend for 18 months.
And are you fucking wasted at that point?
Oh, God.
It was totally horrible. Out of it?
Oh, yeah. And I was, I racked up 5 million miles with American Airlines. You know what I mean?
Right.
I was horrible. You know, I couldn't do it today. Plus, it was I was paying for my own flights, and it was at a time when round trip cost $1.90.
Nothing, right? Yeah.
I once took an Eastern Airlines mail flight. That's how packed that I was. It took me 17 stops. It took me like 20 hours, almost a full day.
Just to do.
And I said, for $59. I said, I'd rather pay $500. I could never do this. I was a moron.
What was Kinison like on stage? I mean, I've seen clips, but
best I've ever seen.
Better than Pryor?
Better than Pryor.
At that point, Pryor's.
But listen to me, Pryor. I can't believe that I had Pryor, Rodney, and George Carlin on my speed dial when we had speed dial.
Right,
you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
These guys were my idols, my heroes, and we became close friends. I mean, we would hang out with you. Remember, Pryor came in one night, and I said. You want to go on, Richard? You don't want to bump me? He goes, no, man. I'm here to see you. I need a laugh. Get up there.
Really?
And I'll never forget that as long as I live. Because a lot of times, if you saw Pryor coming, you'd jump to get to, and then you wouldn't look at him. You wouldn't make eye contact.
Right.
This guy's the king. I mean,
right.
When he did that, Richard Pryor live, I mean, it was life-changing for me seeing that.
When you were a kid, when did you want to be a stand-up? When did you know that there were stand-up comedians?
Oh, my God. That's great. I was working as a janitor in City Hall in Cambridge, put myself to college.
How old are you then?
Shit, I don't know.
Early 20s or something?
40 years ago, so
yeah.
I'm 60. Yeah, 23? 20, yeah. Okay. So I took the other janitors out for lunch, which was beer. So come on, we'll go get some
right.
beer. With a night shift, you know?
Yeah.
So we went down to Image Square, and we went into the Springfield Street Saloon, and I saw Sweeney, and I saw Bill Campbell.
Right.
And I saw somebody else. And the guys over there said, Lenny, you're funnier than them. So the next week.
Sweeney's one of them?
Sweeney was one of them, but Sweeney was amazing. Sweeney was on First Comedians ever.
He must have been a kid too then.
Yeah.
No?
He was, he's a little older than me.
Yeah,
but
not
still,
much. Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't believe how funny he was.
Right.
I want to be like that guy. You know?
Right.
So I was in college with George McDonald, and he said, come on over to the house, and we listened to a Woody Allen album. Now, I didn't know Woody Allen was a comedian.
Right.
But I took his bit. And I went and I changed it to mine. I went and said, you got a standing ovation. And this little guy comes back and says, Mr. Clark, you're very funny, but you shouldn't use Woody Allen's material. Woody, who? Fuck you. Get out of my guest room. And I said, I'm back.
Have you heard that Rosie O'Donnell story? The first time she went up, she went to a club in Long Island and legitimately lifted Seinfeld's entire act from the Merv Griffin show. And her argument was same thing. She said, I didn't know you couldn't do that. She just thought that's what comedians did.
No, no, I didn't know Woody Allen was a comedian.
A comedian, right? you just thought he was like
a famous director,
just an actor,
an actor, director.
So you just took his lines and incorporated your life.
Exactly.
That's funny.
And I only did it once. I just did it once because I got bagged, and I was, oh, I can't do that. And that's why, I don't lift anyone's material.
No,
I can't even remember my own.
Right.
A lot of times people will do a joke and say, that was great. They go, Lenny, that's yours. I go, but I mean, sometimes I'll tell jokes which are just, public domain.
But
very rarely on stage. I mean, I do my own stuff.
I would think that maybe Rodney was an influence.
Oh, God. I love that man.
Yeah.
I was on tour with Kennison, and we were out for about 3 months.
Right. And, it was all over the country?
Everywhere. I mean, he was hot as a pistol. My brother Mike, he couldn't get work, and Mike brought him back here. This is before he blew up.
Yeah.
And Mike got him, he got banned in every club in Boston, and he came to Stitches. It was the last thing, and he walked in, and he's shit-faced, and he says, I said, Sam, I need this gig. I can't have you, bring me down with you.
Right.
He goes, do you trust me? Do you trust me, baby? Do you trust me? I said, yeah. He goes out with half a bottle of Moet, downs it, burps, and goes, someone's fucking me. From that moment on, he killed, and the Lions group booked him into the Paradise and in a bigger venue. I mean, right after that night, it was just, he broke through and he was set in Boston, but it was because Mike brought him in.
Was he, was Kinison a largely unhappy guy off stage? Like when you dealt with him, was he a guy who would have high highs and low lows, or was he always insane? Or was
it was basically always, I mean, always insane.
Yeah.
But the thing that killed me, Craig, he was a Baptist minister.
Right.
And sometimes late at night, he would get into the,
and
he'd be speaking in tongues. Right. It was crazy shit.
Right.
Oh my God, it was unbelievable. Like nothing you've ever seen. And, oh, God, there's so many Kennison stories, but the one that sticks out to me is we're doing the Outlaws of Comedy at Dunes Hotel, and he says, listen, why don't you go out and get things ready for us? So I went out the day before, and he drove out. He bought a Corvette and drove out with this girl who used to be like a Japanese stripper, Tamayo Osuki. And he says, you'll be a comedian now. And he wrote some, so she's on stage one night. She goes, you know, when I'm Japanese, I come to America. You people, when you were young, you walked 6 miles in the snow to school. When I was a young girl, you people drop atomic bomb on me. So now, I just think it's so funny, right? So her and Sam drive out to Vegas.
Right.
They're at Caesar's Palace in Big Suite. I'm over the Dunes in the suite. He goes, Mr. Lenny, come, Sam is dead. I can't wake Sam up.
Oh,
Sam
Jesus.
Dead. So I go flying over Caesar's Palace, come up, kicking the door. I go in, and he's there, passed out, his underwear on a big bed. And I slap him around. He's not moving. So I take a bottle, I take the champagne bucket that's still got the hot water, and I dump the ice on him. And he comes through, and she pushes me out of the way and looks him in the eye and goes, welcome to Japan, Mr. Bond.
Really said that?
He had her program that every time he woke up,
she was going to say it to him.
That's the first thing. Welcome
Jesus
to Japan.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, he was insane. Insane.
Does his life, does he go from, like after that back to school thing, does that change when you go on the road? Does that change your quotes? Does that change how many get paid per spot?
Absolutely.
Because I didn't know who he was until then.
Well, you know, the funny thing about back to school is Rodney, we come off the road and Sam's going to film. So we go to the set. And Sam says, hey, Rodney, I'm so excited. He says, how about you, kid? You want to be in the picture? And I said, Rodney, will you do me a favor? Will you put my wife in the movie? And he goes, you're going to give up a fucking spot in the movie for your
wife? I was
going to
say, you're not in it.
And I said, Rodney, I've been on the road with him for 3 months. He goes, say no more. The picture's in the picture. So he puts my first wife, the Playboy model, puts her in the scene where Sam is screaming at him, we should put them back to the 47th parallel.
In the school, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to love another fight. So she's right next to him.
Oh, is that her?
She's the redhead next to him.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's funny.
So that marriage lasted another 6 months because of that.
There you go. And you got along great with Dangerfield?
Unbelievable.
And he was great to young comedians, right?
I mean, that was his... Well, here's the deal. When he was doing young comedians, the last one he did.
The HBO ones, yeah.
Right. He had been auditioning all sorts of people. And my brother Mike flew out and said, listen, you got to go up to Rodney. So I went up to him. I said, Rodney, I said, is there any way you can take a look at me? He goes, kid, I've seen 1,500 comedians the last week. I'm tired. I got to go. And I said, okay. And he walked away. He turned around. He goes, hey, now if you could be in New York next week, I'll take a look at you. And Mike went out. Yeah, we'll be there.
Right.
So we get on a plane. We fly back to Boston, get some clothes, get on a train, go down to New York. I'll never forget this. It was that between me and Bill Hicks, who became like
a legend, huge, you know?
Yeah. So I went up to Hicks at the bar and I said, listen, it's down to me and you. May the best man win. After this is all over, we'll have a drink. He goes, I'm drinking now. And I go, Wrong answer. So I go outside, and I'm pissed. I punch in like one of those old phone booths. I was so pissed off, and I came in. Rodney goes, "Who wants to go first?" I said, "I'll go first." So I went on, and I burnt the room down. Rodney goes, "Fuck! Now I got to put you on the show." I go, "It's not my problem." So we ended up putting both on the show.
You and Hicks,
but yeah, Hicks, me, Dice, Dom Irrera, Carol Leifer, Barry Sobel. I think that's about it. Maybe one other person. I can't remember.
What year is that? Late 80s?
Jesus. Mid 80s? Yeah, yeah.
And back then, and maybe I'm wrong, but it seemed to me back then, every town, every city, it seemed like that was sort of the boom of stand-up comedy, where a place popped up, you know, in every city. That doesn't seem to be this case anymore.
No. Well,
what happened?
When I started, there was L.A. and New York.
Right.
And a little bit of Chicago.
Right.
But Chicago had started to tail off.
So why was there an explosion?
My brother Mike said, "Why are you going to New York? Why don't we do it here?" He said, we'll light this place up.
Right.
So we took over a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
Barry Kremens was the first guy who got it going.
Right.
And then the guys from The Connection said to me, "Hey, we're going to go to this Fern Bar on Mass Ave at the Ocean Wall Theater. It's really nice." But the Shun Lee said to me, "Will you stay with me?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, you're managing." I said, I'm not a good person. Well, my brother just got laid off at Polaroid. He'll run the place. He said, "What if he screws us?" I said, "If he screws us, we'll tell my mother. Don't worry." So Mike ran it. My brother Mark was the doorman. My sister Ellie was a waitress. Another sister was a bartender. It was like a family running with the Chinese. It was crazy.
But it seemed like it exploded.
So what happened?
Like, why all of a sudden is there one in Minneapolis and one in Miami and one, you know, wherever? You know better than me.
Right. Well, it did. Boston became so big. It was a hotbed. I think it was because you had a lot of the students from MIT, Harvard.
Yeah,
All around. And people would come. And they were seeing live acts. And we'd put, Wednesday night was open mic night. And I would put on 30 people. 30 people. I'd be smoking a joint. Someone would come in. "Hey, man, what am I on? Give me a joint. You're on next. It was a new show every single week. And it just exploded. And the Tonight Show saw an article written about it, about this Chinese restaurant in Cambridge. And they came to audition for people. So this is my Tonight Show. This is my shot.
Right.
And me and Mike said, I was, "Who are we going to put on?" So he said, "We should put this kid Wright on." I go, "Yeah, give him a shot." And Steve Wright was so afraid, Kirk. He would come on stage with his back to the audience. And I would go up on stage and I would physically force myself. "Look at these fucking people. They're paying to see you. Look them in the eye."
Did you know he was great?
No, I didn't know. The minute we saw him, I went, this kid's special.
Right.
But I didn't know he was a germaphobe.
Right.
He didn't like to be touched.
Right.
And the poor kid would try to tell me, and I'm fucking, you know, that's walking off.
Right.
And years later, to this day.
Yeah.
Now, I go up and we, like an elbow bump, you know, because it bothers him, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm in tune to that now. Back then, I didn't know.
Were you ever on Carson or no?
No.
No. Did you ever get close?
Oh, I got as close to Johnny Carson backstage as I am to you.
Right.
And it's the only man, the only person in my life that he looked at me in the eye with a look, "Get the fuck away from me."
Really?
He was standing there smoking a butt. Yeah. We brought Teddy Bergeron. Teddy Bergeron, this was his second day. He went crazy the night before. And we got him cleaned up and ready and bought him a suit. He's ready to go. And while Teddy's in his dressing room, I said, "I'm going to go back and meet Carson." So I walked by. And people, "Can I help you?" "No, I'm good." I walked right around. And I got as close to him as this. And he took a puff out of his cigarette, looked me in the eye. It was like, "Get the fuck out."
Jesus, really?
And I turned around and walked away.
Huh.
Only guy that I've never.
Right.
You know, I mean, I've met presidents. I've met three presidents. It didn't faze me, but it was that look. And he was a prick. Johnny Carson was a prick.
Well, you hear that from everybody. Yeah.
Now, Freddie DeCordova, who was the producer, came in one. I'm at the Comedy Store one night. In comes Kirk Douglas and his wife, Freddie DeCordova, Don Rickles and his wife, and they sit center stage. And it's her birthday, Kirk's birthday, wife's birthday. So I went out, and I says, "I don't want to, you know, be offensive to Kirk Douglas." So I cleaned up, but I kicked ass. I just really did a great job. And Don Rickles comes back. He says, "How long have you been doing this, kid?" I said, "About 13 years." He goes, "That's all? You're fucking fantastic. I want to meet someone. Freddie DeCordova, he's on the Tonight Show." Freddie says, "Oh, man, you're great. Give me a call." So I call him, and he goes, "Nah, you know, we love you, but Johnny wouldn't like you."
Really?
Yeah.
Because Carson was a kingmaker.
Oh, I mean, you did Carson.
Your life changes, right?
Exactly. Like, Steve Wright. When they came to the...
So you do Carson on a Wednesday night. Thursday, your life is totally different.
Absolutely. When Drew Carey did it on a Wednesday night, Thursday, he had a TV deal with ABC.
And then, and when you go and play somewhere in some city, then suddenly the price goes through the roof, right?
You can name your price. You sell up. It's incredible.
You love Rickles? You think Rickles is great?
Oh, God, yeah. I loved him.
And he's still working, right?
Yes.
If you want to do that? If you're around and Rickles is got to be almost 90.
No.
Do you have a date? Do you have a date where you say, do you think, put it this way, do you think there's a, like, I'll see Rickles clips now, right? Yeah. Like, he'll still go on with Kimmel. One of these guys, and I fucking love Rickles, but it's sad, kind of sad now seeing them.
Yeah.
Is there a part of you that thinks you don't want to, and you're not there now, obviously, but what you do is a point where you say it's not going to be funny if you're up there at age, you know, George Burns did it, Joan Rivers did it.
Yeah.
Is there a point where you say.
George Burns' 95th birthday.
Really?
Yeah, and I met Priscilla Presley, Raquel Welch, and Anne Margaret.
Jesus.
I mean, it was, and I would do them now.
Oh, fuck yeah, that's what I.
I mean, I'll join the Grandma Club. I don't care. Yeah. No, they were so hot.
But is there a point where you'd say, you were going to say, I don't want to do it anymore or no?
Listen, I'll be totally honest. Due to the political correctness that has taken over this country in the last 7 years, I'm on a type. I mean, I was always on a high wire with doing my act because it's not written out. It's not.
Sure.
You know, I go with what you give
me. So you know, right. What do you mean it's not written out? I mean, you have an act. Don't you have a course, like a basic theme or no?
Not really.
You've never sat down and wrote jokes?
I did for Boston Strong. It was a I wrote that specifically for that.
So when's your next show?
Friday. I'm doing two shows Friday in two different places. One at Giggles, one, and Saturday, two different places.
So my point is, you just show up there, and just bullshit.
Yep.
You have some hits.
I have stuff that I know will work.
I mean, you'll play a couple of things that have worked. Right.
Yeah, you test
shit out. Some stuff works. Some stuff doesn't work.
Kirk, if it's going good. The other night I did this show.
How long is your basic? So if you're the headliner, how long are you going?
45 minutes.
And you can do that easy. Stand on your head now.
Yeah.
Right. At first you couldn't though, right?
Oh no, it took me years. After I got busted stealing Woody Allen's act, I sucked. So I mean, I'd be up there and eating it and going, oh my God, when can I get off?
But that's almost everybody's experience, right?
I think if you're good.
Yeah.
I think if you're good, because I mean, I saw George Carlin, one of the funniest people I've met in my entire life. We went to see him at the South Shore Music Circus, and he had a bad night. George Carlin, my idol.
Right.
Me, Sweeney, Gavin, Mike, we're all watching him, and the crowd just sucked. It wasn't him, but the crowd just sucked.
Right.
At one point, he says, you know what's bad? When you go on an audition, you go on an interview for a job, and you know it's not going right, and you look at the guy and go, hey, who's the cunt in the picture?
That's a great joke.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
That's a great joke.
That is so mad. So I go back a year to the day later.
And he gets no laughs on that.
No, nothing. I spit up my drink.
That's a great line.
A year to the day later. We go back. He burns the room down.
Yeah.
And he comes back and goes, now that's how it's supposed to be. I said, that's how.
Oh, so he remembered.
He remembered. Oh, yeah, he remembered.
Yeah.
I think if you're a comic, if you're a good comic, you remember the bad shows more than the good ones.
Right.
Because, you know, you can go out, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and do the same act, same show, same joke, same thing, and different reaction all three times.
All crowd reliant, right?
Exactly. But I was saying the political
I was going to ask you. So
it's horrible. It's horrible. I used to be able to go on stage and say or do whatever I wanted. It was like, sanctuary. You were fine.
Well, what's a joke that you can't tell anymore?
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, put it this way. When you're on stage now, are you thinking?
Oh, God, yeah.
Are you thinking, fuck, I can't say this. Yep. I can't say that.
Yeah,
I can't.
Editing. I spend more time editing myself than I do enjoying myself. Because, you know, when the crowd's going, right, and it's going, it's the second greatest feeling in the world. But when it's bad, oh, man, there's nothing. It's horrible.
When this started, you think about 7 or 8 years ago?
Yeah. That's when I started to really feel it. You know what I mean? People, you know, I didn't like. Now, there's this girl. I work with this girl. I love this guy. I forget her name because I haven't seen her in 20 years. But she was, and you know, she was doing this Wizard of Oz bit. You know, there was a time when a lot of comedians, 9 out of 10 comedians were doing a Wizard of Oz.
Right.
She's in Kansas. Right. This woman comes up and says, I really didn't like that Wizard of Oz bit. My aunt was hit by a flying house.
Are you one of these comedians, and say, you know, Jerry Lewis a year or so ago, I've heard other comedians say this, who think that women aren't as funny as men?
Oh, no. Oh, no, not at all.
No.
I work with this girl, Christine Hurley. She's the funniest woman I've seen.
She's funny.
Since Roseanne, before Roseanne lost her mind. Because when Roseanne was hot.
You're talking pre-sitcom, when she's doing stand-up? Or?
Yeah, well, yeah, Roseanne's stand-up was phenomenal.
Right.
She went on Carson.
I remember, right. Was her act basically that she was a housewife?
Yes.
And, so it was basically the sitcom was her act, right?
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
And she was funny.
She was lights out funny. And,
but something snapped.
Something snapped.
Yeah.
I blame Tom Arnold.
Do you like the ones that have broken out big, like Sarah Silverman you like?
I love Sarah.
Amy Schumer?
Amy Schumer, doesn't do it.
Steals anymore. Jokes, maybe? Have you seen these stories? Have you seen that? Does that worry you?
Nah, listen.
She stole one from they claim from the guy who died a couple of years ago. What the hell is his name?
Patrice O'Neill.
Patrice O'Neill.
I heard that, yeah.
You like Artie Lang?
Love Artie. I did a show with him the other
you
night.
You did one in Worcester. Yeah, I had him on the podcast a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I love Artie.
How's he doing?
He's got a new show with Judd Apatow.
Yeah, on HBO,
right?
So
that's going to be Apatow hasn't had a failure.
But I'm talking to him on the thing. He's like, yeah, I'm sober now. I'm like, oh, great. How long has it been? He's like, since March. I'm like, that's not the answer I was hoping for, Artie. I was hoping for three years.
I've known Artie over 25 years.
Yeah.
And I saw him when he was on
Mad TV?
Mad TV.
Yeah.
A good friend of ours, Lauren Dabrowski, was the executive producer.
Right.
And I said, how was she? She goes, I did everything I had to keep him on the show as long as I could. I just loved that. But he's crazy.
It's wild.
Oh, yes. Yeah. He's nuts.
Did you like doing sitcoms?
Loved it.
Yeah. Oh. Easy or no?
Well, hard work, but good hours.
Yeah.
I would do, if I could have whatever I want, I would like one sitcom to run the syndication.
Then you'd be done.
And I'd go away. I'd never bother.
Well, you were close, right?
I was close.
How close was the Larry Ketch show?
12 shows away. And here's the deal on that. Don Ohmeyer, who's the president of NBC.
NBC, yeah.
Raging alcoholic. You go into his office, big, big office on NBC, and the entire thing covered with booze bottles.
Really?
Yeah, it was fun. Sit down, have a drink. And if he told you have a drink, you had a drink with him because he's the president of the network, right?
Right.
So he hated Larry Kett because Larry Kett was a dry drunk. He was sober.
Yeah, it was his, right.
Hated Larry Kett. Larry Kett hated him. So it came down... If Larry Kett did one more show, he got like an $8 million bonus. I don't know how it was worked out, but this was that. So he calls up Warner Brothers and says, I want you to cancel the Larry Kett show. And they go, why? It's a top 20 hit. It's a mayor going into syndication at the end of the season.
You're right.
I want it out. And he goes, why? He says, look, he says, you've got Friends, which is number three, and you've got ER, which is number one.
Right.
Both our shows. Make me happy. Dump Larry Kett.
And they did
so
it?
So they dumped Larry Kett.
Jesus
now,
Christ.
It meant the difference for me between a few million dollars, maybe $3-4 million, and 10 grand. Greg was
right.
It was the biggest kick in the balls I've ever gotten.
And for Larry Kett, it must have been.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
Did you like him?
I respected John.
Yeah.
He was tough. Made me a better actor. Made me a.
What was tough?
He would fire people. He would fire people. And...
Oh, it's his show, right? He was the executive producer.
Yeah, he was the guy. Yeah, I mean, he
was. He an asshole or?
Some days.
Yeah. You didn't get along with him all the time.
I got along. Hey, man, he's the boss.
Right. Did you always think you were going to get fired?
I always thought I was going to get fired.
Yeah.
There was one show I should have got fired.
What happened?
I got a little high.
Oh. Right. That's it.
I mean, I was an idiot.
Right.
I couldn't believe. I was back in the day when I was doing all, everyone was doing it, but that doesn't make it right. But I get so high in between shows, I couldn't remember the lines.
Oh, Jesus.
And the line was, "He'll never be the man his father was." Talking about John Fitzgerald Kennedy, John.
Mm-hmm.
And that'd be a man like his old man was. His old man was quite the man.
Right.
Larry Kett was so pissed at some other guy. He fired the other guy. Didn't even realize I was high out of my mind. When I went on the first day, I went on the show. Okay, I'm going to audition. We go. I get the role as a cop. And we go. After the show, he goes, man, you're terrific. He says, are you a friend of Bill's? I said, best friends. And he walks away. I said to some guy,
who's Bill?
And he goes, no, Bill, nobody realized. Oh, yeah. And I was still using it.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to get fired. But I made it through. And one day I had a kidney stone attack on the show.
Ugh.
And in front of the audience, I mean, they pull an ambulance onto the set. And As I'm getting well done, I go, John, I'm sorry. And he goes, Lenny, don't worry about things. You just make sure you're better. Take care of your health. And as the ambulance doors close, he goes, somebody call Louis Anderson.
Did he really say that?
John, I tell you, John was one of the most amazing actors I've ever had the pleasure of.
I got to tell you, he fucking the Night Court. Dan Fielding is one of the great sitcom characters ever.
He won 4 Emmys in a row.
He should have.
And he could have won 5, but he took his name off the list and he said, one of the biggest fucking mistakes of my life. I guess I feel let other someone else want it. No, fuck that. That was a stupid mistake on my part. So when he was doing that, you see, that Night Court was, the show was originally surrounded around Harry Anderson.
Harry Anderson, yeah.
And Harry was a big comic.
Well, he got the, and the he
time.
Was on Cheers, do you remember?
And he became the star.
Right.
Larry Kett took that over.
So that became his show.
Became his show.
Right. Well, that happens. You know, Family Ties is originally about the mom and dad. Yeah. And Michael J. Fox just took over the show. Did you work with Louis Anderson much at all?
I worked with Louis a lot.
Yeah?
Louis's a great guy.
He seems like, I heard him on the Marin podcast. He seems like he's a complicated, well, you all seem like complicated guys. I guess you have to be to get in the business, right?
Yeah.
There's got to be some demons. Do you know any comedian who is just a normal fucking guy or girl and just gets in the business and lives a normal life?
No.
People say that about Seinfeld. Is that true? Do you know him at all?
Yeah, I did Oprah with Seinfeld. I mean, I didn't fuck it. I did the show. Yeah. Seinfeld, Meany, and Dave Coulier, from stand-up to sitcom. It was amazing. And
you like him?
He's all right.
He's getting a little preachy to me.
He's never gone out of his way to, you know, do something for me. You know,
because
he's never had me on cars and coffee or whatever.
Right.
I'm not his type of guy, you know, because, Jerry was a very clean, concise technician of comedy. Very, very good at what he did. That's why he was very successful.
Sure.
But his show, when his show debuted, my show was on TV. I kicked his ass in the ratings. Lenny on CBS beat Seinfeld in the ratings every single time. And then they retooled it, and then I got canceled. But, I mean, the numbers were there. I had the numbers. Show could have lasted.
Do you think the last sitcom you were a regular on was the Chelsea Handler? No.
Yeah.
That right?
Let me see. I think so. Yeah.
3 or 4 years ago or something?
Yes. Yeah.
That didn't work?
God. Tom Warner. I waited 25 years to work for him.
Right.
And he calls me, I want you to do the show. And I go, I'm in. We'll discuss salary. I don't give a shit. I'm in. I want to work with him. He owns the record for shows in syndication.
Sure, of course.
He's unbelievable. So Chelsea sees the tape. She says, he hires me overnight. So everything's going good.
Right.
And then I'm working with Laura Prepon, who I love. You know, another girl from I forget the name of the show.
Orange New Black?
No, she's in that too, yeah.
But, oh, it's that 70s show. That's
show.
A Werner show,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, right. Show, right? They're all Werner shows.
So shit, no kidding, yeah.
So I love her. We hit it off, and it's going great. And Chelsea's insane. I mean, very nice.
What do you
very
mean?
She come riding in with she'd pull up in a Bentley and a traveling bar.
Really?
Oh, yeah, really. Oh,
so the persona is real.
Dead real.
Well, that's hard to do. It's hard to run a show like that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? I don't know why she didn't play herself, because when... She played the sister.
That's right.
And Laura played her.
That's stupid.
And Laura was amazing, but Chelsea was a damn good actress. Because we had a lot of scenes together. And when she'd come to work, I'd want to be on my A game, you know, because she's the boss.
Yeah.
You know, but she was right there, step for step. And she said, you're a great actor. I go, I got to be, man. I need the job.
Right.
You're filthy rich. You just signed another guy with $58 million. You're banging 50 cents. You know?
You like Louis C.K. or no?
I love Louis.
You do?
Louis used to drive me to gigs and stuff.
You could have been on. Did you see this, Horace and Pete?
I heard about it.
You could.
Stephen Wright?
You could. Stephen Wright. Well, Stephen Wright, and they're super tight, right?
Were
they always or no?
I don't think so.
No, they're both local. I didn't know what the history was with those two.
No, well, Steve popped before. And
sure.
And Billy Burr's another big fucking star. You know?
Right.
Well, these guys, you know, I was bringing people on. Just come on, Louis. But I like Louis. I think he's great. And, you know, I'd love to do a show.
Why do you think so many comedians and so many writers come from Boston? What is it about here? I grew up here. What is it? What makes it funny? It is funnier than other places.
It really is. I think in regards to stand-up, the crowds, when they come in, they know what's good. They know if you suck, they'll tell you. If you're good, They'll encourage you and they'll give you the energy.
Right.
But if you suck, they will fucking tell you.
And it's also just a you know, everybody here is an asshole. Like,
oh, God.
In a good way, but like, yeah, like all your friends are assholes. I'm an ass. Like, everybody's an asshole.
Oh, but believe me, I've got papers that say I'm an asshole. I mean, it's just, we are real. Some of us just don't use the filter. You know,
right.
we're very, very honest people, you know, and sometimes we just don't use the filter.
Did you understand, it's in my head now, you mentioned earlier, because I never really enjoyed Robin Williams, the stand-up comedian, that much. It was almost too much for me, if that makes sense. Like, I was watching a guy losing his mind. Like, I can't imagine what it was like in 1985 watching him on stage.
I spent a few nights with Robin.
Yeah.
Like, last weekends, you know. But I loved him as a guy. He was one of the sweetest. Shit, I mean, we went to this place one night. He was trying to cut back. He was trying to stop drinking. And my brother Mike, went to this place called Area. Now, it's in. I figure. Rob goes, I heard about this new place. We'll go. So we'll go with him. Everything, doors open up, and they have mushroom toadstools, like about 3 or 4 feet high, 5 feet high. There's tables. You lean on them. Like,
right.
And midgets come out from under the toadstools.
Jesus.
Can we get you a drink? Can we get you a drink?
Jesus.
And Robin's trying to drink it. Yeah, give us some, like a few bottles of Cristal, right?
Right, right.
Me and Mike are drinking them out of the fucking bottle. Robin's drinking water, right? But he's, he loved ugly broads. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Really? That was his thing?
Yeah. I said, what? You know, it's crazy. But he was the greatest guy, the nicest guy, most friendly and good to everyone. But I only saw him not being on.
Yeah.
When we, you know. I mean,
right.
It was really weird. But he was a great guy. And I went out to meet him when he popped. Mm-hmm. At the Holy City Zoo. I wanted to see. I went right up.
Right.
I got on stage with him. And we hit it off. And we became great friends. And, I didn't see this coming.
No.
No, I didn't. I didn't. You know.
But it seemed like he had some down. Obviously, he had some down downs too, though, right? He was up and down and up and down.
Yeah. But a brilliant guy. I remember he introduced us to the Superman, Christopher Reeves. And I'm sure.
They were good friends,
yeah,
right?
And I went, God, Chris, fly around the box. Right. Rob was going, Lenny, please, fuck you. He can do it. I mean, the things you do, you wish you could take back. Yeah.
Did it ever, when you would watch these guys that, you know, like, Robin Williams or these guys, and they would go on to insane movie careers, you know, and you didn't. But did you ever care? Were you ever, were you okay, content with what you were?
I mean,
you've had a great career.
I ended up marrying a Playboy model, living in a $3 million home on the beach in Marina Del Rey.
Right.
With drivers. I had a gardener for a lawn the size of this room. I had a Mexican maid. Who would say, hello, Maria, Rose Sr., another fatty. You know, I had meat delivered in trucks.
Right, right.
I mean, I had Sub-Zero, Viking. I had all this shit that was the best, custom made.
Yeah.
And I was miserable. I mean, I was miserable. Spiritually, I was miserable. But I had more money than I needed. Every time the phone rang, it was like another $50,000 call for an appearance, private jet flying, signing pictures. It was when you're on TV, it's a whole other stratosphere. And I mean, I was on CBS, I was at the Tiffany Network, I was at the top of my game. It was unbelievable. And then the war broke out, and it went to shit. You know, I mean, but I'm just a kid. I'm just a kid from Cambridge. You know, I mean, I see the success of other people that I my peers, and I go, hey, you know. I'm happy for him. I wish I had a taste of it now. I'd appreciate it so much more now.
Right.
But hey, I have to accept where I am right now, because it's my hand that I'm dealt.
But what you've done, though, is like, which is hard to do, is you've kept working.
I've had three network sitcoms as a lead. No one's done that. Nobody in the history of TV's done that. You know, I mean, and they've been good shows. And I would like a shit show, like According to Jim, to run for 10
for 6 years.
Yeah.
Tim Allen's on some show now.
Who?
Tim Allen's on some show now.
Yeah.
I've never fucking heard of it. And they said they picked up for its seventh season, where he's like a dad or something.
Last Man Alive.
Whatever it is, and he must be cashing these insane fucking checks every week, right?
He's still getting checks from
Home Improvement.
Home Improvement. And all of the Santa movies he's in, the Claus movies.
Oh, Toy Story?
And
do you work with him?
I worked with him a lot, yeah.
I mean, his story's wild, too, though.
Yeah.
He's fucking drugging, drugs to being like America's dad? It's fucking crazy.
I know. It's nuts.
You worked with Larry David, right?
Yes,
I did. You were Clear History?
I love Larry.
How was he?
He's fantastic.
Did you know him as a stand-up?
Yeah, well, I saw him work 35 years ago.
Because I heard he was crazy, like insane. Like, he'd scream at the audience.
Yes. Like Larry gone mad. Like Larry David gone mad from Curb. Yeah. And I saw him at the Catch a Rising Star.
Yeah.
You know, because I would go down. I would take the train down.
Yeah.
And I would wait. Because I was from Boston, they'd fucking hate me. And they'd put me on last. And I would go on and I'd fucking burn the room down, get $10, get on the train, and come back and be a fucking lead paint inspector during the day.
Jesus Christ, man.
But that's what Mike said. My brother said, no more of that shit. We're going to do it here. Let them come to us. And it was the best movie ever made.
So when you do something like Clear History, that was the name of it, right? The one with John Hamm.
Yeah.
Do you have to read for that? You have to audition for that? Does Larry David know you and you're good?
Larry says, Lenny, would you mind auditioning? And I said, I'll do whatever you want.
Right.
He said, now, there's no script. Is that a problem? I go, that's when I do my best work.
Right, there's no script for the movie, right?
Exactly.
So how does that work? He just says, here's a scene.
And this is what we want. Go.
What are you in that? You're like a local town.
Card player.
Right.
So John Hamm walks into the room for the first day. And he goes, son of a bitch. Tall.
Great looking guy. Got to be an asshole, right?
No.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
But I'm thinking, yeah. So he comes out here, look, and he sits next to me. Hello, Lenny. And I go, John Hamm, look at you. Jesus Christ. Movie star looks, tall, dark, rich, giant cock. And he starts, he goes, who told you about my cock? I go, the girl's in wardrobe. He goes, well, yeah. I go, but you're not funny. 2 minutes later, he fucking says a joke. He cracks us up, and I go, it's not fucking fair. You've got it all. You giant cock, handsome, and you're funny. Well, if I had a giant cock, I'd rule the world.
Yeah, well, listen. You can't get everything, Lenny. Real quick, before I kept you in long enough. How was Stronger?
Oh, my God. Pretty intense.
Yeah. So how's that process come about?
Well, they call me and ask me if I don't. See, you know, I still audition. I have to audition. Even after everything I've done, I have to audition.
Not for the Farrellys, though, right?
No. And Dennis. I mean, people like that. People know me. They just still let me show up. And if you could read the script. But a lot of these movies... I was in Colorado, and they said, we want to audition you on Skype. And I go, great.
Really?
Set up a Skype thing for me.
Is that awkward?
It was real awkward because I couldn't see them, but
they
could
see
me.
You, right.
So I couldn't see the reaction. So he goes, you know, the guy you're playing is a real prick, and you'd be more of a prick. And I said, yeah. And I was in a bad mood that day, so I really pricked it up. And they go, you know, even when you're a prick, we like you. And I go, oh, shit. And they go, but how would you like to play the uncle? It's a much bigger role, and he's a really lovable guy. And I go, fuck yeah. So I went in for the audition and I was two lines in. They go, forget it. I said, what? You're hired. I went, that never happens.
Yeah.
And then I got the, and I turns out I'm playing Bobby Jersey, who I know, I love the guy.
Through Jerry,
and I
didn't
realize it was him until Jerry told
That's
me.
Funny.
Yeah.
And that comes out at the end of this year?
You know, I'm not sure, Kirk, because they're going to do it
next year. Oh, that's the right.
You know, the big bang bang, shoot him up. And then, but working with Gyllenhaal and the...
And how was he?
It was great. I did a movie with him 15 years ago.
What'd you do?
Called Moonlight Mile.
Oh, the Dustin Hoffman one.
Yeah. So I meet Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, why do I know you? I said, oh, I'm a comedian. He goes, yeah, but I said, I'm friends with Dennis. He goes, oh, Dennis is my dear friend and neighbors.
Oh, really?
So he said, tell me a joke. So I told him a joke and he goes, you stay with me all day. And Dustin Hoffman made me sit next to him and tell him jokes all day.
And he played Lenny Bruce.
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
That's a wild. That's we were in Moonlight Mile. I don't remember that.
I was just a bartender. A patron in the bar.
Yeah, and then is Bobby from Chelmsford? I mean, I know him a little bit through Jerry. Is it pretty accurate? I mean, is it kind of a?
I think,
is it serious? Is it?
I think it's dead serious. But yeah. I mean, I'm the only light.
That's what I'm saying. You're comedic relief in a serious
movie.
Exactly.
Yeah. And even Gyllenhaal said to me, he says, "Man, thank God you were here because." You know, so intense, no legs, and you know, I mean, going through the horror of the family suffering for what they.
Right.
And they said, you know, they'd say, sometimes you'd say, listen, no, nothing today. No, don't even talk today. You
know? Right.
And a lot of times I'd walk in and I wouldn't be on the set. They go, where's Lenny? I go, there's nothing for me to do.
Right.
do something.
Do something.
So they let me, because David Cameron Green, the
director, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he wants to do a series with me. And
really?
I said, really? I said, all it takes is a phone call. Because he's Danny McBride's best buddy.
Oh,
and I
right.
did Hit Clear History with Danny.
Yeah.
And I think that helped get me the job, you know?
Do you see Vice Principals yet or no?
No, I haven't.
I've watched the pilot. It's pretty fucking funny.
Oh, he's great.
He's a funny
Danny,
guy.
Right. Now, Walter Goggins, he's from The Shield. He's
yeah.
great.
It seems like there's 5 million opportunities now to do shit, though, right?
Well,
is that good or bad?
No, it's always good when there's more to, I mean, it waters down the money.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, that's bad in that way. But you got to understand, it's like you said, I have managed to.
Keep working.
A body of work for
that's what I mean.
35 years,
right.
40 years.
I mean, there are guys your age in your business who have died or burnt out or quit or just said fuck it, right? And they're selling insurance or real estate somewhere.
Yeah, I know. Guys I started with,
right.
You know, like
probably funny guys, I'm sure.
Security guys. And yeah. So I'm going, oh man, it breaks my heart because, I mean, they were really funny. You know?
Right. Have you ever had like a real lull where you're like, I don't know if this is going to work?
All the time.
I mean, really?
Yeah. I, if I'm not working.
But you've always done.
Yeah, Kenny Rogers goes, oh man, you haven't had a TV show in almost 8 weeks. You must be killing me. We play softball. We have a softball team. Our average age is 56 years old.
Right.
And we beat these 23-year-old kids, all comedians.
Right.
So one kid hit a home run off me, and he's running around first place, and Kenny goes, you know, Lenny got another TV show.
Oh, that's funny. But no, I appreciate it. I'm going to let you go. You've kept you here long enough. And given that you hate me, I don't want to keep you
here.
I'm going to keep you here any longer. I'm going to keep you here any longer. I'm going to bring you anytime you want to come back because I got a million other questions. I want to know what Jim Carrey's like.
Oh, geez. Jim, I knew Jim when he came here from Canada. He was here for about maybe a month, and he landed a TV show, a network TV show. It only lasted about 4 shows.
Yeah.
But he was a big star.
Right.
And then
down.
Back in the clubs.
Right.
Working the clubs. And then he did the Clint Eastwood movie, Deadpool, I think.
That's right. He's in the beginning of that.
Right?
Right.
And big, dead.
Down.
And he did another one.
So Peggy Sue got married.
Peggy Sue got married. And he went up again. And then down.
And Living Color. And then.
Then when Living Color came, through the roof. And then the movies. Lemony Snicket. I did Lemony Snicket with him.
You were in that? That's right.
I made a fortune on that movie.
Yeah.
One day. It's funny, too, because Meryl Streep comes walking by me. And she goes, hello. And I went, oh, my God. Meryl, look, I'm Lenny. I'm only here for a couple of days, but I just want to tell you, I think you're the greatest actress. No, fuck that. You're just most amazing actors, whatever. She said, Lenny, I'd love to have you gush a little bit more of me, but I'm sure Jim's going to want to do another fucking take.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, he's super into it.
Meryl, see what I fucking mean? Meryl Streep likes to do one, or maybe two takes.
And she's out.
She's perfect.
Carrie's a maniac, right?
40 fucking takes.
Jesus.
40.
You had to do that with him a couple of times, right?
Yeah.
Me,
myself, and Irene, and then the Lemony Snicket.
Right. You know. So you got Stronger.
Yep.
And do we have a title for this
Shepherd's
other one?
Shepherd's Maiden.
Shepherd's Maiden. Is that going to be? Am I going to be able to see that?
Yeah. It's going to be a. It's going to be a one of the independent like Sundance type things.
Right.
Hopefully, we go to Sundance. That'd be great. I'd like to go there.
And it's done. It's completed.
Well, what we did is we made a short film.
Yeah.
That they take out to L.A.
Test it for you. See if somebody likes it.
And then they probably want to change other actors sometimes.
Yeah.
But I'm not changeable.
You're the star of the fucking show.
That's it.
You're the star of the show.
Star of fucking thing. Yeah. And what happens is then we'll make a full length version.
Yep.
And then it'll go to the theaters.
Excellent. All right. Again, thanks for coming in. I'll let you go.
Thank you, Kirk.
All right,
I
Lenny.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. See you later.
All right. Thanks as always for listening to the Enough About Me podcast. If you want more podcasts like this with guests like Artie Lang, who else is going to have Artie Lang and fucking Bob Ryan on the same podcast, or David Portnoy and John Tomasi? If you want to listen to podcasts like this, you go to iTunes, Stitcher, you go to WEI.com, you go to the mobile app. When you go to iTunes, leave a rating, leave a review, and subscribe. That's going to help us out a lot. If you want more of these, leave a rating, leave a review, and subscribe. Make sure you do that for me. That is a command. Now do it.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world.
Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.